Every USL team has kicked off the 2024 season. And by the way, Phoenix rising or falling? Welcome to All Talk, all USL talk, USL covering all the latest scores, news, and developments. The second highest division of the United States men's professional soccer system, the USL Championship. I'm your host, Vince Galvano. Plenty to get into in what was an eventful match day two of the USL Championship. I said it in the beginning of the show, at this point, we've seen every single team play so far. We've seen some surprises along the way over the first two match days. The only team that has played three games so far has been El Paso Locomotive. Other teams with only one game, other teams with two games. In any case, plenty to get into in today's show. I'm going to talk some of the latest news first. We'll go into Brooklyn joining the USL Championship. We'll read out a little bit as well what's going on with Knight Pickering being called up for the United States men's national team, the youth team, that is. Then we'll get into the match day spotlight. This week we'll feature Loudoun United taking on North Carolina FC. We'll then have a rundown of all the fixtures that took place for match day two. And then we'll preview match day three coming up around the corner. Starting first with Brooklyn joining USL Championship ahead of its 2025 inaugural season. This coming from the USLsoccer.com staff on USLChampionship.com. It states the United Soccer League announced today, March 14th, 2024, that Brooklyn Football Club will debut in the USL Championship in 2025, pending sanction approval by the United States Soccer Federation. The USL Championship is a top level of the United Soccer League's men's soccer pathway, featuring 24 teams in 2024. And is sanctioned as a Division II league by United States Soccer. In June 2023, the USL awarded New York-based North Sixth Group a USL League One franchise in Brooklyn, and most recently, a USL Super League franchise, which received Division I sanctioning by the United States Soccer Federation. The club will play at Maimonides Park in Coney Island and is set to first kick off this August in the inaugural season of the USL Super League, followed by the 2025 USL Championship in March. Brooklyn is a globally recognized community with both a rich soccer history and cultural demographics that make it a tremendous community for professional soccer, said Jeremy Allenbo, president of the USL Championship. We would like to welcome Brooklyn Football Club to the USL Championship and look forward to their effort in bringing a world-class professional football experience to millions of soccer fans that call Brooklyn home. We believe in the potential of professional soccer in the United States and feel that no market captures the beauty, diversity, and passion of the beautiful game quite like Brooklyn. This was Matt Rosetta, chairman of North Sixth Group, the principal owner and operator of Brooklyn Football Club. We are thrilled to be partnering with the USL to bring to life the vision for Brooklyn Football Club, which will be one of the first sports franchises in the United States to have a professional men's and women's teams competing at the highest levels under one unified platform. The move into USL Championship, along with the recent announcement of our women's franchise, showcases our commitment to bringing a fresh new vision for professional soccer to the borough of Brooklyn, said Mac Mansfield, CEO of Brooklyn Football Club. We're excited to compete at the highest levels in the USL system and believe the sporting staff, players, and personnel we are recruiting will be a testament to our professionalism, and will make our supporters extremely proud. That can be found again on USLChampionship.com, but Brooklyn will have a team coming to the USL Championship in 2025. New York is back. As I mentioned in episode one talking about the show, I recall the days watching the Rochester Rhinos, but they are no longer the USL Championship, but New York will have a team soon. Next year, Brooklyn, still pending approval, obviously, the sanctioning approval by U.S. Soccer, but should go through. And we will see how things, you know, fare for Brooklyn and for Coney Island having its own soccer program. I'm very interested to see as well if it has the best hot dogs out of the USL Championship. Always love Coney Island hot dogs. So that will be very interesting. So that was really big news coming out of USL, knowing that it'll have another team coming part of the Eastern Conference next year. Elsewhere from the USLChampionship.com, this on March 15th, Memphis 901 FC forward Knight Pickering has been selected in the United States U19 men's national team squad that will travel to Morocco for a pair of games against England on Sunday, March 24th, and Morocco on Tuesday, March 26th. Pickering joins the squad having made a strong start to the new USL Championship season. The 19-year-old scored the game-winning goal in 901 FC's season-opening victory against Las Vegas Lights FC in spectacular fashion, firing a dipping shot from 25 yards to lift the side to a 2-1 victory at AutoZone Park, claiming championship Goal of the Week honors in the process. So congratulations as well for getting Goal of the Week for match day one for Knight Pickering. The article will go on to say then, a native of Birmingham, Alabama, Pickering joined Memphis midway through the 2022 season from FC Dallas Academy. Since then, he has recorded 39 appearances in the USL Championship's regular season and playoffs, logging 7 goals and 4 assists in 1,267 minutes of action, a strike rate of a goal every 181 minutes. Also named in the squad are two former Oakland Roots soccer club players, with defender Drew Murray and midfielder Ethan Kohler, each having represented the side a season ago before moving to Bundesliga clubs in Germany. Drew Murray is now with Freiburg, and Kohler with Werder Bremen. So, very, very interesting news there. Congratulations to Knight Pickering for being called up, as well as getting the USL Championship Goal of the Week for week one, match day one. So those were some of the two news headlines that I've had. I have another news item that we can get into, but we'll get into it when we talk about Oakland Roots later on. I do want to then switch topics to the match day spotlight between Loudoun United FC and North Carolina FC. Prior to really delving into this one, I would like to shout out a couple of the players that were featured as part of USLChampionship.com's sort of 11 players to watch, albeit defenders, young players, new joiners, midfielders, forwards. They had selected 3 players from North Carolina FC, starting first with defender Paco Gregg from England. This from USLChampionship.com. So Paco Gregg, last season, and Miami FC were taking a step forward to join the contenders in the Championship's Eastern Conference, but the setbacks piled up as the side was unable to find a consistent track and ended up outside the playoff positions. Despite that, Craig remained one of the best-regarded centre-backs in the league, putting up a goals-added mark of plus 6.63, trailing only Defender of the Year Arturo Ordóñez and Connor Donovan among centre-backs according to American Soccer Analysis data. As Miami cleared house this offseason, that gave North Carolina FC a chance to swoop in and acquire Craig as one of the veteran centerpieces for their squad as it returns to the championship after winning USL League One a season ago. With more than 200 appearances in the league across the regular season and playoffs, Craig fits the bill as a player still at the top of his game that can contribute a lot to head coach John Bradford's squad. He won the USL Cup with Louisville City back in 2017 and 2018, and he was also USL All-League first team in 2017, 18, and 21. So congratulations for those little accolades, but a huge presence in the defensive line for North Carolina FC this season. In addition to Paco Gregg, we have Olex Anderson from St. Vincent and Grenadines as one of the players to watch. This from USLChampionship.com as well. The last time we saw Olex Anderson in the USL Championship, it was as a rambunctious young forward with Tacoma Defiance on the way to earning his shot with Seattle Sounders FC in Major League Soccer. 8 years later, he's back, having produced the best season of his career for USL League One title winner North Carolina FC as the club returns to the championship this season. Anderson bagged 5 goals in 19 appearances for the Defiance at an average of a goal every 193 minutes approximately as an eye-catching winger before earning his shot with the Sounders. The St. Vincent and the Grenadines international still has a serious speed to burn that can stretch opposing defenses, but this past season, he appeared to put it all together in front of goal with career bests in goals, 17, assists, and 6, shooting accuracy at 55.6%, a shot conversion rate of 23.6%. Those latter two numbers feel sustainable, and with an experienced supporting cast joining him this season, it could give Anderson a real chance at success. That was Olex Anderson. He had 15 appearances with Seattle Sounders FC in 2016. Part of the squad that won the MLS Cup back in 2016 as well. The last player that USLChampionship.com shouted out for North Carolina and FC for anticipation of this season was Mikey Maldonado. So he was the midfielder, and the website had this to say about Mikey Maldonado. Some of the North Carolina FC squad that claimed the USL League One title a season ago will bring prior USL Championship experience with them to the squad's return to the second tier. That isn't the case for Mikey Maldonado, whose breakout year with NCFC, after competing previously for forward Madison FC, earned a starting spot this season. Maldonado was a workhorse in the center of the midfield for NCFC a season ago, recording almost 3,000 minutes of action and recording 37 tackles won at a 66.1% success rate and 168 recoveries while completing 85.7% of his 1,178 passes across the regular season and playoffs. There are plenty of new faces at Wake Med Soccer Park this season, but Maldonado should still get his due and opportunities to shine. So those are some of the three players to look at for North Carolina FC as the season rolls on. For Loudoun United FC, only one player got shout out from those five articles that were produced by USLChampionship.com, and that was Drew Skundrick from the United States, a utility player, player to watch, a veteran as well. USLChampionship.com had this to say about Drew Skundrick. 3 years ago, Loudoun United FC had a plan. They signed Drew, who could provide a veteran presence in midfield for the younger players coming up alongside him in the club squad at the time. Skundrick then headed to training camp alongside some of his likely new teammates with DC United and was promptly signed to an MLS contract before he'd kicked a ball in Loudoun's colors. Times have changed with Attain Sports and Entertainment's acquisition of Loudoun United prior to last season, but in signing Skundrick, the plan seems similar to that which the club had previously envisioned. After a campaign with the Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC that showed off Skundrick's versatility, being asked to fill in at the fullback as well as his regular midfield role, he comes to Segra Field as a player who can provide balance in the middle of the park and leadership in the locker room. For a Loudoun side that showed flashes of promise last season, but ultimately a lack of consistency, Skundrick's figures to be a key piece in the club's pursuit of a first post-season berth. And Drew Skundrick had recorded 39 appearances with DC United in 2021 and 2022, respectively. So that was one of the only shout-outs. I will, in our match day spotlight, cover some of more players. I just need to adjust my seat here. Hold on. So let's get into this then. Match day 2, March 16th, 2024. We'll start with the spotlight match of Loudoun United FC taking on North Carolina FC. Loudoun was hosting North Carolina at Segra Field with an attendance of 3,810 people. Elvis Osmanovic was the referee officiating the action on Saturday for Loudoun United taking on North Carolina FC. It was a beautiful 64-degree sunny day in Virginia with some nice stands and bleachers all around the field. The first half, I noticed, had quite a bit of wind in it. At like 10 miles per hour, I looked when checking out on Google, but it settled down a little bit in the second half. In any case, plenty to show out for the game that Loudoun United hosted North Carolina at. On the call, by the way, for the game, color commentary was Jeff Antonella, the former MLS goalkeeper for the Portland Timbers. That was quite interesting to hear his takes on things, especially talking about Correa and Faro as the game progressed. It was a 4 p.m. kickoff, and Loudoun United had set out a 3-5-2 in formation as the tactics going forward. In defense, it was a fluid formation. They would drop back to really just a simple 4-4-2. North Carolina instead would opt for a 3-4-3 in attack, and then defending, they would go into a 5-4-1 for most of the game. That was kind of how their fluid formations took place. What was interesting prior to heading into this one was that North Carolina had made 6 changes from the opening game after their draw 0-0 against Charleston Battery. Very, very interesting to see that many changes, and it was very interesting to see if it would pay off. In any case, let's get into it. The first half starting off, a very touch-and-go start. Both teams were aggressive, playing the long ball quite direct. A couple fouls, nicks and bits as the game progressed in the opening stages. I think the best chance that came in the opening 10 minutes was in the 7th minute from Loudoun FC. Loudoun United FC, that is. With Keegan Hughes having just a header over the bar, but it seemed that both teams were canceling out each other to start things off. Hugo Ferreau, the goalkeeper for Loudoun United, had a nice snag in the 10th minute. I was like, okay, let's see if he can really come off his line throughout the course of the game and keep things under his possession. I noticed as well, you know, right after this, Pelayo played a beautiful, nice diagonal ball to Brewer for North Carolina FC. And there was a really nice, good one-on-one battle in the first opening 10 minutes. And from what I saw from the right midfielder Brewer for North Carolina, he was impressive. And he won his one-on-ones well in the first half. Some blistering pace, a simple move, just, you know, getting onto his right and trying to get the cross in. In the 11th minute, Loudoun United had another chance from El Medcar with a nice idea trying to curl one from the left side. It was a nice offensive reaction from one of the only mistakes that came in the first opening minutes from North Carolina FC. So they're quick on the counter with it, Loudoun United, but the shot didn't come off as much as he had anticipated to. So in 15 minutes then, you know, it was clear that North Carolina were pressing Loudoun United FC quite high, but a credit to Loudoun United because they were doing a good job of keeping the ball in the back, and I was really, really impressed with Kwame Awuah. He had a nice shield in the 15 minute when they were being pressed. He received the ball on the left side in his left back position. Just was able to turn, you know, put the studs on it, shield things off, wait for the center back to come behind him, and then lay him off for just a hooking ball up the line. So I already saw some nice, good awareness from Awuah for Loudoun United. North Carolina were really trying to make some nice triangle combos on the right side to start things off in that 3-4-3 formation. You'll tend to see that. There are triangles that it can open up either on the left flank or the right flank. It just happened to be the right flank to start things off for the game. And then the 20th minute hit around, and the game had settled at this point. Loudoun United FC had become more patient in trying to get a tempo of the game, trying to dictate the pace. I just thought they could be... They can see what North Carolina was offering them and then go from there. But you can see what North Carolina was doing at the same time. They were quite chippy, some smart tactical fouls in the middle of the park anytime Loudoun United FC broke through. I did disagree with Antonella's call that North Carolina FC dictated the pace of the game. I don't think that was the case. For the most part, in the opening 20 minutes, they were canceling each other out. And then Loudoun started to put the pieces together towards the 20th minute, right? You can see they were getting a foothold in the game, and it wasn't a surprise to me, at least, that in the 22nd minute, Loudoun United FC scored a beautiful goal. They were able to recuperate the ball in the midfield from a North Carolina mistake. And right away, El Medcar started pushing forward. The ball found its way out to the left midfielder, left wing back, center back. He was everywhere. Awuah played a beautiful left-footed cross, early ball into the box, and El Medcar with a beautiful diving header to seal the deal and get that first goal, the opening goal of the game for Loudoun United FC. That was really, really solid, and I was really impressed with what I saw from Awuah there. The fact that he was able just to be composed when he got the ball, picked his head up, saw where El Medcar was, and played one of the best balls I've seen all season, albeit it's shortened to the season, but still very, very impressed with what I saw already from Kwame Awuah, the Canadian. All right, so I mean, the opening 25 minutes, Loudoun United were able to get the first goal, and you can see they were really riding the momentum wave after the goal. Things were still chippy, a couple fouls being going for both teams across the center of the park, and in the 28th minute, North Carolina FC had their first chance, Conway with a header that went wayward. It was a nice build-up play. I mentioned the combos before, and this time they did it up the left wing. And then they also found success with really bringing those three forwards narrow and seeing them to get some target header flicks over the back line for the wide midfielders. So I was really impressed with their wing play. North Carolina seems to have that strength going forward. Seeing if they can just pinch those, we can say, wingers in as more second strikers, just next to the forward, and then allowing for more space on the outside. And they tried to do that, North Carolina FC, you know, playing with really a front five at some points, just have the right midfielder, right wing back, left midfielder, left wing back, whatever you want to call them in the 3-4-3, right, pushing up each side and seeing if they can combine with the wingers that were tucked in. And the 34th minute, Brewer again exemplified his pace. He was getting some nice whips on his crosses earlier, and then he got Leggett booked in the 37th minute. And in that same time span, we saw the goal for North Carolina FC. Now, there was a crowd the keeper tactic on the set piece. Now, the ball was played in. Faroe came out, didn't get a hand on it, trying to come out with one hand in an ocean of bodies, not going to favor him. And the ball gets played in the mixer, low, and it's Maldonado with the first goal for NCFC's season. I really credit North Carolina, by the way, for really staying composed after they conceded. Loudon did have some momentum, but it just dissipated, and North Carolina, they didn't panic. They were having success pressing, but more so, they were having success with their wing play and allowing Brewer to showcase his pace. And getting a Loudoun United player booked in the process, right? Taking advantage of the set piece. Faroe coming out with the one hand, not the way you want to do it. Jeff Antonella on the call for the color commentary. Like I mentioned, the former MLS goalkeeper for Portland Timbers. He was very, very critical of that. You know, when you come out as a goalkeeper coming out with one hand, it's always not a good sign. You have to get something onto it. Didn't get anything onto it. And it just falls to Maldonado simply in the box. And right before the first half concludes, North Carolina had equalized. So congrats to Maldonado for getting North Carolina FC's first goal of the 2024 season. It's goal back, being back in the top flight, the USL Championship. He's put in the hard work, and for him to get the goal, I think it's a credit to him. So, I mean, that was really it for the first half. I think it was tight, but North Carolina were my winners in the first half. I think they left with much more to go into the halftime break. They had more passes in Loudon's half. They pinned them back quite well. For the most part, I mean, the dividends were split for the first half between the two, obviously, with the scoreline. First 5 minutes were back and forth, nothing really quite direct. But then after the first 5 minutes, it was Loudon, for me, that did quite well. They were able to get the goal at the 22nd minute mark, right? But then afterwards, North Carolina reacted really well. They came out looking better, and they had much more going into the second half. So it really could have gone either way. That was kind of my feeling going into halftime. In the second half, things didn't change for either side. In terms of substitutions, nothing to change, but Loudon United FC made some nice changes tactically. So Leggett went on the right side for the second half, which was a smart move since Brewer smoked him in the first half. And then El Medcor, who was like roaming on the left, free, he kind of just ventured a little bit more in towards the middle of the park. Obviously, he got the goal in the first half, but I think that was the signs that Loudon United FC's coach was trying to make at halftime, right? If we can get El Medcor free in space, have him just kind of roam on the left, but also venture towards the middle. So that was interesting to see. I had noticed that right off the bat, that Leggett wasn't playing on the left side anymore. And kudos to that, because I mean, having a yellow card and having Brewer out there could have been ugly, especially if he had been sent off for another foul. Both teams had to play quicker in the middle of the park to start off. They were just stringing some passes. They can play one-time passes, Loudon United FC, definitely. But it just needed to be a little bit more sharp and quick to start the second half. But they were settling into it. In the 51 minute for Loudon United FC, Awua had a beautiful overlapping run. It did a nice Maradona as well before getting fouled. I was really enjoying watching the Canadian center back, left back play from what I had seen of him. As I mentioned, composing the ball in the first half. His awareness, and especially in the side back role, because I had played side back a little bit in college just from personal notes. It's always like, okay, when do I go forward? When do I come back? But more so, when can I go forward as a defender? Obviously now, the role of side backs are changing more and more. We see false side backs coming in the center of the park, playing, you know, as a pretty much a center midfielder. Otherwise, you have the offensive fullbacks coming up the field. awareness is key in this position, especially in a three back. If you're gonna go up the field, and I think Owoo just demonstrated some good awareness. He's really, really sharp in terms of when to join, when to stay back, positioning, and so forth. Really impressed with him, and he's got the skills to show for it with a nice Maradona before getting fouled. A couple minutes later, I just noticed, like in the 54th, 58, North Carolina were too slow to really get up and change, really react when winning the ball, and so I was just seeing, okay, it seems like Loudoun United are going to start taking more and more advantage of the game, dictating the tempo. And in the 55th minute, my goodness, North Carolina almost got an early Christmas gift from the goalkeeper, Faro. It was played back to the keeper. Faro tried to force the pass to Skundrick in the middle of the park, trying to split, you know, a forward and a midfielder to try to get to him. And it was picked off. And my goodness, North Carolina almost had a simple goal, a nice gift. And they could, if this ball had went in for them, and luckily for Faro, it didn't, and for Loudoun United FC fans in attendance, I think I'm quite confident North Carolina would have walked out of Virginia with something, either a win or a draw. Faro, no need to force that pass to Skundrick. I always, as a goalkeeper, it's good to see, you know, what they give you, who's pressing from where. If you don't got anything, don't panic. Just play the diagonal to the wide midfielder. Just simply get your foot underneath it and get the hell out of there. And Antonella was making the same call, making those same remarks as well. So, man, oh man, the game could have changed big time had North Carolina capitalized on that opportunity. In the 58th minute to Loudoun United FC, we saw the first real save of the game from Carrera, who's on loan from FC Dallas, the goalkeeper right now for North Carolina. El Medgar got his redemption shot. I mentioned in the first half, El Medgar came up on the left side, tried to curl it, didn't go well for him. In the first half, it went wide. This time, he actually got on target and forced a nice save from Carrera. And it was the first corner of the match for Loudoun United FC. Not too many corners in this game. 3 minutes later, things would change big time. You don't take your opportunities, and on the back end, you're going to have to pay the price. In the 61st minute, there was a beautiful goal for Loudoun United FC. It was Zach Ryan with the goal, and it was El Medgar with the assist. El Medgar receive it towards the middle of the field, take his space, and whips the ball right into Ryan's feet, and Zach Ryan takes a very nice touch to set him up perfectly and simply places it behind the goalkeeper for the second goal of Loudoun United FC. And Zachary Ryan, to me, is a striker who is confident in his finishing ability. Just the touch and shoot really took the sting out of the pass that El Medgar gave him, and was calm, cool, and collected to slot the ball past Carrera to give Loudoun United FC the goal. And 2 minutes later, North Carolina, they react well from going down, and it was Nelson Blanco, the El Salvadoreño, in the midfield with a nice cross that just went a little wayward. But I was like, okay, all right, North Carolina. But after that, it was Loudoun United FC again. And the 66th minute was coming around. It was way past the hour mark. We were approaching the 70th minute, right? And I'm asking myself, where are the subs? Who's coming on for, what's going on here? So, you know, six changes before the game from North Carolina, but where the heck are the subs right now? Well, as soon as I said that, the subs came onto the screen, and it was Olex Anderson coming on for the striker Conway. So I got to see, and I was quite excited to see what Olex Anderson could do back in the USL Championship. El Medgar, the Syrian-American who got the assist and goal, came off for Abdelatif Aboukoura, who was the Egyptian 19-year-old. Anyway, Olex Anderson would come on for Conway, and in the 70th minute, it was the Anderson show. I was right off the bat, this guy was making a huge difference. And I noticed it right away, sharp with his touches. It was a corner kick in the 70th, and it came out to him on the top of the semicircle outside of the box. He spins out, he flicks it really nicely for the 1-2, takes the space, and he's just sprinting at this point up the field. It's him, and nothing's going to stop him. And unfortunately, he attains a professional foul from one of the midfielders for Loudoun United FC. Gets a jersey tug, and Loudoun gets the yellow card. But Olex, right off the bat, like I said, really sharp with his touch, awareness solid, lays it off, takes the 1-2 at the top of the box, and you could see he was already zoned in, ready to go. And a couple minutes later, holy smokes, the ball gets played out to the right side of the box of Loudoun United. He ends up getting it, chasing it down, splits two defenders with ease, and smacks the inside of the post of his shot. Really, really, really impressive. Just 5 minutes within the game, not even. And he's already showcasing what a nuisance he could be for the back line of Loudoun United FC, giving them problems and things to worry about. But the way he split those two players and then proceeded to shoot at that angle, which isn't really a high percentage angle, and somehow managed to hit the post, credit to him for that. I think after the post shot, Loudoun United has started to string some nice one-touch passing together. There are spurts of this Loudoun United team, and they play soccer, especially for the second game of the season, in terms of chemistry, right, with one-touch passing that teams would dream of to have by the middle of the season, or maybe even the end of the season. But to have it already so early on, even with Francois not playing this time around, really, really cool to see. Nice potential from them. In the 77th minute, Anderson comes back with the vengeance. He makes a great run with some service provided by Perez, but Faroe would make a huge save coming out to close the angle well and anticipating Anderson's intentions. A very important save for Faroe. And he would come up big a little bit later as well. It was Martin, the midfielder for North Carolina FC, to slip in Oleks Anderson on a beautiful breakaway. Somehow the ball gets caught underneath the heel of Anderson, and Faroe closes down the angle, and the ball makes its way out waywards. Another good opportunity that just didn't come to fruition for North Carolina FC. Some more subs in the 84th minute as Loudoun United FC were looking to drown the game out. Around this time as well, there was a square ball that got picked off by Kwame Awua. He goes forward for the cross, it gets cleared out, and then settled down by Loudoun United FC and finds its way to the Egyptian Aboukura. And in the 85th minute, we get a goal from the 19-year-old Egyptian. He does a nice, beautiful 1-2 pass with Ryan and slots the ball far post at the top of the box. So it's sealing the deal for Loudoun United FC, scoring the third goal of the game. Ryan gets a goal and assist. El Medkar got a goal and assist. And the Egyptian Abdelatif Aboukura gets his first goal of the 2024 USL Championship campaign. After this goal, they were showing some footage of the fans. There was a nice red smoke grenade going off, and it was quite evident at this point. All the traveling fans that went to the game, very, very happy. Smiles across the native Virginians, and some drums banging really nicely in the background. And that would be the sounds as the game would then reach the ultimate sound of the final whistle. It was a really fun game. I was glad I was able to catch this one. 3-1 for Loudoun United FC. I think North Carolina didn't capitalize on the momentum they generated from the end of the first half. Brewer didn't get enough of the ball in the second half. He got subbed out in the 61st minute. Credit to Loudoun United FC coach Ryan Martin for making some adjustments, putting Leggett on the right side, who was on a yellow, right, freeing up El Medkar. And then Loudoun United FC finding him in great space, and credit to him for taking that space in the dribble and drilling a key pass to find Ryan through, and Ryan's confidence oozes with his touch and finish. It looked Loudoun United FC's game, and I was begging for some subs, right? And at this point, we got one big time with Oleks Anderson coming out to close on the 70th minute, and he went on a one-man show for a good 10 minutes, hitting the post and getting a breakaway, only to be stopped by Faroe. And then it was the Egyptian 19-year-old to seal the deal, 3-1. Some stats across the game. Not many corners this one. 3 corners for North Carolina and only 2 corners for Loudoun United FC. Possession pretty much split down the middle. 4 shots on target for Loudoun, 2 shots for North Carolina. And yeah, touches in opposition box. I like this stat always. 19 for North Carolina, 11 for Loudoun United FC. I really, really like Loudoun United FC's ability to play one-touch soccer. I think they're showing, like I said, chemistry in the opening part of the season that most teams hope to have at the end of the season. For North Carolina FC, some nice triangles on the outside for some nice combo plays. I think Anderson as a super sub is a good bet. I'm sure he can also start if need be. More importantly, we can say also congratulations to Maldonado for getting the first goal for NCFC's campaign back in the USL Championship. And yeah, I also loved watching Kwame Awoa, the left wing back or center back. He was fun to watch for me. And he did a great job as well. I mentioned his awareness, but more importantly, he was able to ping the ball several times to the forward's feet, which is not easy, but he did it with conviction and choosing the right moments to do so. In addition to that, I also should share that I didn't mention this in the first episode, but I am a Wigan Athletic fan. Been so the case since 2009. One of the teams that I support, in addition to Juventus as well. But Tommy McCabe, the center midfielder, really reminded me of former Wigan players that I grew up watching and have watched recently, and that's really James McLean, who was a former Wigan player, as well as Max Power, who played for Wigan as well as Sunderland in the lower English division of League One or the England Championship. In any case, Ty McCabe, for me, just he struck me as a midfielder who can play in like that era where Sheffield United was really good. Really, really good. When John Lundstrom was playing for Sheffield United back when they were in the Premier League recently, he just struck me as a player that can play in the English, either lower, albeit lower divisions. But not sure if Loudoun United fans feel the same way. If you catch Ty McCabe, just picture him in a Sheffield United jersey or playing in the second or third division in England. Yeah, I feel like he just fits the bill for me. That will do it for the match day spotlight. Match day 2 spotlight, that is. We'll then shift attention to the rest of the games that took place over match day 2. Prior to getting into it, just real quick, El Paso Locomotive did play Monterrey Bay from a Wednesday night fixture. We could say from match day 1, didn't cover it because, as you know, all episodes for Talk USL are coming out on Mondays. In any case, they drew 1-1. And then El Paso Locomotive would go on to host Louisville City, who are making their first appearance in the 2024 campaign. El Paso Locomotive would fall short to Louisville City in a 1-0 defeat. It was Wilson Harris scoring the only goal of the game in the 57th minute from a header in the center of the box to the bottom left corner, making a official winning start for the 2024 season for Louisville City with the 1-0 victory at Southwest University Park. The goal marks Harris becoming the youngest player to reach 50 regular season goals in the USL Championship's history. For El Paso, on the other hand, most games played so far with 3 and only 1 point to show for it. Not in the best of positions. Good news is, if we can say any good news, right, they play Las Vegas Lights next, who is also 0-2 with nothing to show for it. That being said, right, El Paso not 0-2, but only with the 1-1 draw and 1 point that they had with Monterrey Bay to show for their 3 games played so far. No other team with 3 games played so far. We'll shift attention then to a huge game of match day 2, arguably one of the biggest, Rhode Island FC taking on New Mexico United. This from RhodeIslandFC.com. Rhode Island FC's historic inaugural match came to a dramatic close Saturday evening in a 1-1 draw against New Mexico United. The physical matchup from starting to finish was highlighted by a sold-out atmosphere of fans and supporters coming together to witness the Ocean State's only professional soccer team take the pitch for the very first time. Rhode Island Governor Daniel McKee, Pawtucket Mayor Donald Greben, and Bryan University President Ross Gittle were joined by Rhode Island FC Chairman Brett Johnson to conduct the ceremonial coin toss. The electrified fan base stood united for the first ever national anthem on their own pitch, sung by Rhode Island native and former American Idol finalist Erica Van Pelt, after a U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter flew over Burns Stadium. Fans took to their seats as fireworks exploded before the highly anticipated match finally kicked off. So some really nice opening game festivities going on, pre-match festivities, a lot of notable people from Rhode Island in attendance for their USL Championship opener, the first official game in the club's history. The first goal of the afternoon, unfortunately, came from New Mexico United in the 67th minute of play by defender Talon Maples, after an outswinging free kick was poked away by Rhode Island FC keeper Koke Vegas. Maples found an opening on the rebound and sent a right-footed shot from close range to the bottom right corner to give New Mexico the 1-0 lead. So it was worrisome, right? The club's inaugural match, though, would take a dramatic turn in the dying moments of the second half stoppage time, rewriting the Ocean State history books. Pressing the New Mexico defense once again, Fuson sent in a cross from left to right as Doyle charged into the box. Diving to get his foot on the ball, Doyle was closely marked by Gloucester, whose mistimed defensive effort saw the ball slice past New Mexico goalkeeper Alex Tambakis. Bringing every fan to its feet, the last second goal would forever go down in Rhode Island soccer history as the first time fans celebrated a goal in the Ocean State. What a way to end it. So happy for the 5,200 fans, sold out fans, in that one. This is a pretty key result. It snaps a streak of three losses by expansion teams in their USL Championship debut. I also want to give a shout out to, and I'm going to label this, by the way, Talk USL is going to label this as the official podcast for Rhode Island FC called Raising Anchor. After my second episode back on March 11th, Raising Anchor reached out to me and they said that they wanted to say that they've been enjoying what I've been putting out there. Really appreciate that. Shout out to that podcast, Raising Anchor, for the kind words. And you have Talk USL's blessings for the official Rhode Island FC podcast. So if anyone ever asks me, hey Vince, what's the podcast for Rhode Island FC? What's Rhode Island FC's deal? I'd be like, you just need to follow Raising Anchor. That's all you need, because those guys will take care of everything you need to know on all things related to Rhode Island FC. So congrats for the hard-fought draw, the 1-1, and the goal in the 90th minute. What a way to conclude their opening match. Shifting attention to Memphis 901 FC taking on Indy 11. Memphis 901 would lose 1-2 to Indy 11. Two red cards, the second of the USL season. Memphis did win the second half for some consolation prize. There was a nice overhead kick in the 90th minute by defender Sissoko, but it was Jack Blake with a penalty kick in the 26th minute, as well as Martinez getting a goal right before the end of the first half to give Indy 11 two goals and enough to get the 3 points. So 2 weeks until Memphis play San Antonio FC, and both side backs, Ward and Jimenez, are out at the moment due to suspension. So, wasn't only one red card, it was two red cards, both their side backs, Ward and Jimenez. San Antonio FC have a really good opportunity against Memphis come the next time they play each other, which will be in 2 weeks' time. Tampa Bay Rowdies 2, San Antonio FC 2. Prior to the game, by the way, this coming from the newsletter, the official newsletter of USL, The Rondo, which is written by Nicholas Murray. San Antonio FC head coach Alan Marcina had said that his side was going to be making a major change in its stylistic approach for the 2024 USL Championship season. We had saw signs of that pointed out by Nicholas Murray in the Rondo. Two main items here, knocking around and building from the back. San Antonio's 619 passes and 514 successful passes were the most the club had recorded in a USL Championship season since the league partnered with Opta prior to the 2017 season. And the build from the back, center backs Mitchell Tainter and Kendall Burks recorded the two highest individual passing totals for the club over the same span. Tainter had 99 passes and Kendall Burks had 95 passes. But in any case, it was another 2-2 draw for San Antonio FC and a draw to start Tampa Bay's campaign. And it was the 90th minute goal for Manly that rescued the point. So we've been seeing a lot of 90 minute plus goals. This one coming from San Antonio FC to rescue the point. Elsewhere, it was Jennings who got the goal started in the 4th minute. Ortega then would score again for Tampa Bay Rowdies to give them the second goal in the 72nd minute. Bura came in the 83rd to try to get towards leveling the playing field for San Antonio, but that wouldn't happen until the 90th plus first minute, where it was Manly to rescue the point for San Antonio FC. There was 7,500 people in attendance at Al Lang Stadium. San Antonio did have 60% possession with total passes of 398, with 164 taking place in their own half and then 125 taking place in the opposition half. So just giving a little more shout out to their passing numbers as Alan Marcina is trying to change his stylistic approach for San Antonio FC this season. They did outpass Tampa Bay and managed to get something on the road with the 1 point. Miami FC then take on Sacramento Republic FC at home. Miami FC, having won the first game 2-0 against Colorado Switchbacks, do not register any goals here. Instead, the only goal of the game came at the 59th minute, and that was for Sacramento Republic. And who else but Trevor Amon, the Sacramento Republic forward, scored a nice header from the center of the box, the high center of the goal. It was assisted by Jack Gurr with the cross. Trevor Amon now leads the goal scoring charts with 3 goals in 2 games. And Sacramento Republic FC, they dominated this one in terms of big time, right? Looking at some of the stats here, I look at really passes in the opposition half, 191 for Sacramento Republic FC, while only 50 passes in the opposition half for Miami. Touches in opposition box, we have 17 for San Antonio compared to 8 from Miami. I can already see from some of those numbers that it was Sacramento Republic FC that had the majority or lion's share, not even a possession, but also in some key areas. So, and congrats to Amon for getting another goal. He's the leading now goal scorer of USL with 3 goals in 2 games. Pittsburgh Riverhounds would then go on to take on Orange County Soccer Club in its home opener at Highmark Stadium. Approximately 5,000 in attendance for that one, but Pittsburgh Riverhounds is still searching for its first goal of the 2024 USL Championship season. Instead, it's Orange County Soccer Club to come out with the 2-0 win. Goals from Ilaski in the 3rd minute and then Dunbar in the 76th minute. We want to talk about stats in a game. Now, only 2 shots in the entire game for Orange County Soccer Club. And there are 2 shots that matter. 2 shots on target, 2 goals, 2 big chances, and then 3 points. Instead, for Pittsburgh Riverhounds, they had a total of 12 shots compared to the 2 shots from Orange County Soccer Club. 7 of the shots being off target, only 2 shots making it on target, and then 3 shots being blocked, hitting the woodwork once in the process. Still no Kaiser Sterling for Pittsburgh Riverhounds. I really wonder, once he starts coming into the mix, if Pittsburgh Riverhounds can start finding the back of the net in the process. We'll see what happens when the Englishman comes to play his first game of the season for Pittsburgh Riverhounds. When will that be? We'll see. But something to keep the lookout for. Congrats to Orange County for getting the nice 3 points. Then moving on to Colorado Switchbacks taking on Detroit City FC, who are making their first appearance in the 2024 campaign. And it was Detroit getting the 3 points in a 2-1 victory on the road to Colorado. In the 11th minute, Detroit City FC Elvis Amo had a left-footed shot from the center of the box to the bottom right corner. That was assisted by Maxi Rodriguez. In the 47th minute, Colorado Switchbacks would level it with Matt Mahoney on a right-footed shot from very close range, the high center of the goal. That was assisted by Malik Foster, along with set-piece situation. In the 60th minute, a second yellow card was shown to Koa Santos for the Colorado Springs Switchbacks for a bad foul. And then it would be a goal coming from Connor Rutz of Detroit City FC, with the right-footed shot on very close range to the bottom right corner. So Colorado traveled to San Antonio next Saturday. Congrats to Detroit City FC for getting the job done on the road. And Koa Santos will not be able to play in the next game due to his second yellow card. We'll see what happens as that unfolds in the near future. And then we'll talk Las Vegas Lights taking on FC Tulsa. Las Vegas Lights hosting Tulsa here. Tulsa will also start their season off just like Detroit City FC. with having this as their first game of the 2024 campaign. They start their season off with 3 goals, and more importantly, 3 points. It's Stojanovic in the 11th minute, Gudrum in the 25th, and Josef in the 56th minute for all the goals in FC Tulsa. In the 60th minute, Alba was able to get something for Las Vegas Lights, but for the roughly 1,700 in attendance for Las Vegas Lights FC fans, unfortunately, they couldn't see their team get the job done. So FC Tulsa gets their first win of the season in their first game of the 2024 USL Championship season. We'll then shift attention to last year's finalists, Charleston Battery, traveling to Oakland Roots Soccer Club in California. Oakland Roots would tie this game 1-1 with the Charleston Battery. And I'll read the recap from Live 5 WCSC, written by Charleston Battery on that website from Live 5 WCSC channel. Charleston Battery played Oakland Roots to a hard-fought 1-1 draw at Pioneer Stadium on Saturday. Nick Markinich scored the Battery's first goal of the season in the first half, and an equalizer from Oakland forced the points to be shared. Charleston attack was lively, with 21 shots recorded, but was unable to find a late breakthrough goal. Charleston started the game on the front foot, recording 5 shots, including 2 from inside the box in the opening 25 minutes. Despite not scoring, the Battery continued to apply heavy pressure to the hosts. Nick Markinich broke the game open in the 25th minute with his and the Battery's first goal of 2024. Arturo Rodriguez delivered an inviting cross into the box that Markinich headed home, placed perfectly to beat goalkeeper Paul Blanchett. Markinich's goal brings his tally to the Charleston Battery to 14 since joining the club in 2023. Charleston maintained their dominance through the end of the first half, taking a 1-0 lead into the break. The Battery outshot Oakland 9-2 and held almost 60% of possession. The Battery came out of the break applying similar pressure to the first 45 minutes of play. Oakland, however, managed to equalize in the 49th minute via Ilya Alexeyev. Ben Pierman made his first swap in the 59th minute, bringing Juan David Torres and MD Myers into the mix. Introduction of Myers marked his official debut for the Battery. Charleston stayed steadfast in their high press in search of a breakthrough goal. Chris Allen came close to the strike off the volley in the 65th minute, and Myers with a shot in the 73rd minute, but both were saved. Points were ultimately shared in a 1-1 draw. The Battery's attack had a lion's share of the shots, with 21 to Oakland's 6. Charleston additionally held roughly 67% of possession throughout the whole match. That was from Live 5 WCSC recap from Charleston Battery. Obviously told from the point of view of Charleston Battery. I do have an article on Oakland Roots, which is the second, I should say third piece of news that we have going for them. I'll get to that in a second. In any case, it's a draw, the second draw for Charleston Battery in their campaign. And kudos to Oakland for getting the draw against Charleston Battery. Remember, Oakland had won their first game of the season against Indy 11. So they start still undefeated with 4 points from 2. Charleston instead with only 2 points from 2. This coming from CBSNews.com in San Francisco. Oakland Roots and Seoul soccer teams to play home matches at the Coliseum in 2025, written by Tim Fang for CBS News, a reporter in the Bay Area. The Oakland Roots and Oakland Seoul soccer teams will play home matches at the Oakland Coliseum in 2025 following a decision made by stadium officials last Friday, March 15th. In a unanimous decision, the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum Authority approved a resolution authorizing its executive director and AEG, which manages the stadium and Oakland Arena, to execute a license agreement between the stadium and Oakland Pro Soccer, which owns both clubs. Oakland Council member Rebecca Kaplan, who also chairs the Coliseum Authority, said this about the recent, let's say, announcement, right? The Roots and Seoul soccer team, a beacon of unity and passion, has captured the hearts of Oakland residents and soccer enthusiasts nationwide. Their commitment to community engagement, diversity, and excellence on the field aligns perfectly with the values that make Oakland a remarkable city. Mayor Sheng Tao said on X, formerly Twitter, "The Roots and Seoul radiate Oakland pride in the community, and every step Every time they step on the pitch, they are a model franchise and the town's global ambassadors to the soccer world. The Roots is a men's team that played in the 2nd Division USL Championship League, while the Soul plays in the Women's USL Women's League, with plans to play in the USL Super League in 2025. Currently, the Roots play their home games at Pioneer Stadium on the CSU East Bay campus in Hayward, while the Soul play their matches at Merritt College in Oakland. Oakland Roots posted on social media saying, "What a beautiful day in Oakland. We would like to thank our incredible fans, community members, investors, as well as the mayor, city, county, and all JPA members for their hard work behind the scenes to get this resolution passed today." Friday's announcement comes amid an uncertain future for the Coliseum as the Oakland A's enter their final year of the stadium lease while seeking a relocation to Las Vegas. The team's proposed stadium on the Las Vegas Strip would not open until at least 2028. So a different home venue for Oakland Roots next season in 2025, as well as Oakland Soul, the women's team in the USL Women's League. Very curious to hear what the fans have to say about that one. Just from looking at my notes on match day two, there was only 4,261 people, to be exact, in attendance for the match against Charleston Battery. Putting that into the giant Coliseum, it'll be very interesting how they go about seating the spectators for their matches. Maybe it'll allow more people to show up to the games without problems. Time will tell. In any case, I can reemphasize the fact that Oakland are really tightly knit to their community, following on their social feeds, really enjoy what they have to put out. I know, for instance, I mean, for this game against Charleston Battery, it was East Bay Schools Night, and for the fans that arrived early, they received a nice Oakland Roots and Oakland Soul pencil pouch with some school supplies inside, so really cool giveaways like that, showing their Oakland Roots and Oakland Soul. Great, great initiatives from them. So we'll see what happens in that regard. But very curious to see how that pans out and to see and hear what Oakland Roots fans have to say as they'll be saying goodbye to Pioneer Stadium at the end of this season. Only one more game left to talk about, and that's the big one I said at the top of the show. Is it Phoenix Rising or is it Phoenix Falling? So Monterey Bay Union FC would win 1-0 against Phoenix Rising, courtesy of Baca in the 22nd minute. According to Monterey Bay Union FC fan page, MBFC Discussion, who I follow, we follow each other on social media, in a comment on a recent post of his, he responded to me saying, "One of the best results I've watched from start to finish. We, Monterey Bay, were on one. Played for the badge. There was good work rate, passion as well. They could have even had a second, but 3 points is 3 points at the end of the day. But he couldn't be more proud of the lads." That's m.b.f.c_discussion. If you're interested at all in anything Monterey Bay, I recommend checking out his fan page. Does a great job providing some stats of the players, but always on the up and up with anything happening in Monterey Bay. In any case, it was Rafael Baca, the former Cruz Azul player who had over 300 appearances in Liga MX for Cruz Azul. He had a left-footed shot from the center of the box to the center of the goal, which was assisted by Adrian Rebollar. Frank Yallop, by the way, is the coach for Monterey Bay Union FC. He's been with Monterey Bay since 2021. Here's an interesting stat for you in case you didn't know. Frank Yallop is an OG MLS player. He played 3 seasons with Tampa Bay Mutiny back in 96 to 98. And he has had over 16 years of coaching experience in the MLS, including, get this, coaching LA Galaxy when Beckham had first arrived. In any case, let's take a look, let's listen in on the Keon 46 news channel. Maxwell Glenn, sports director for Keon News Channel 46, he wrote in a recap of the game, saying Monterey Bay FC won its first match of the 2024 campaign, clinching a 1-0 victory over defending champion Phoenix Rising FC. Thanks to the win, Monterey Bay Union FC remain undefeated in home opening matches across their 3-year history. In the highly anticipated showdown, the Union debuted a new-look team featuring 8 new players who signed in the offseason. Of those new additions, Ryan Dieter and Pierce Galloway both made their professional debuts. Dieter entered the match in the 66th minute and Galloway in the 84th. The new-look team also continued to employ new tactics, pressing Phoenix Rising for the full 90 minutes. This would pay off in the 22nd when Rafael Barca drilled the match-winning goal, which was a direct result. Adrian Rebollar intercepted a pass in Phoenix box and immediately found Baca out in front of the goal. Using his left foot, Baca sent home what would only be the lone goal mat of the match. That recap coming from Maxwell Glenn, sports director for Keon News Channel 46 in Seaside, California. Yeah, Phoenix Rising or Phoenix Falling? Right, that's the question. Two games, the defending chance, and nothing to show for it, not even a goal yet. In terms of the second half, I think they did a good job from what I saw of finding Varela in space, but 5 out of their 6 shots in the second half all came from outside of the box. Phoenix last season, as we know, finished 6th place at the end of the regular season with 12 wins, 12 draws, and 10 losses. And as we know, they go on to win the entire thing, having one of the only last seeds to get into the tournament. But I mean, already with 2 losses to start the season. Last season, they drawed a significant amount with 12 draws as well as 12 wins. But should you be worried as a Phoenix fan? A little bit. 2 games gone, no goals to show for it. They do have back-to-back home games coming up against Oakland Roots and then New Mexico. Both teams are on 4 points. Both teams are undefeated. However, nice to have and reassuring to have the back-to-back home games coming up, right? So they don't need to travel for it, but to go 2 games, no goals to show for it, not generating high-quality chances, and struggling to play out of the back in the first half, which caused them deeply when they made the error, and the ball fell to one of the most experienced players, arguably, in the league, who will take that chance every day of the week and twice on Tuesdays. I should say twice on Saturdays. We'll see what happens, but I'm going to monitor this Phoenix team very closely going forward. It's a big, big, big game coming up against Oakland Roots, and to get 3 points here will be bid to really split the dividends, right? To take 3 points from the first 3 as opposed to 1 point from the first 3, or even worse, no points from the first 3. We'll see how they do in their 3rd game coming up against Oakland Roots. Real quick, I'll just run through the match day 3 preview, and then we'll close things out. So, for match day 3, upcoming this Saturday, March 23rd, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, Hartford Athletic will host Birmingham Legion FC. This is a good chance to be, by the way, the match day spotlight for match day 3. Detroit City FC will host Loudoun United FC at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific. Louisville City FC will host Pittsburgh Riverhounds at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific. Indy 11 will host Sacramento Republic FC at 7 p.m. Eastern Time and 4 p.m. Pacific. North Carolina FC will host Tampa Bay Rowdies, 7 p.m., same time slot, as well as 4 p.m. Pacific. Charleston Battery will host New Mexico United on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:30 p.m. Pacific. Las Vegas Lights will take on El Paso Locomotive FC at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 Pacific there. Both teams really in need of a win. That'll be a very good watch, I'm sure. Las Vegas Lights taking on El Paso Locomotive. San Antonio FC will take on Colorado Springs Switchbacks. San Antonio have yet to win their first game of the season. Colorado Springs Switchback has yet to get a point in the season. That also taking place in the 8 o'clock hour, but instead at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time and 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Orange County Soccer Club will host Miami FC at 10 p.m. Eastern Time and 7 p.m. Pacific. Phoenix Rising, as mentioned, will take on Oakland Roots in the same time at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. And finally, we'll have on Sunday, March 24th, Monterey Bay taking on Rhode Island at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 Pacific. Very, very cool to see that Rhode Island have made a good start into the season. And they'll be playing on Monterey Bay, who are probably on a natural high from taking all 3 points against Phoenix Rising in their home opener. Plenty to get into for the next time around. This has been a long but eventful episode. Thank you for taking the time to listen. I always welcome feedback, so if you let me know your thoughts on the show, on the structure, what are you enjoying, what do you like to see more of? I'm always curious to hear your listening habits. I'll make sure to put a poll or some sort of feedback in the Spotify. But in addition, you can always write me an email at talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. I'm everywhere on social at the handle at TalkUSL. And if you want to support the podcast, just make sure to give a review on whatever platform you are using to listen. Make sure to tell your fellow friends, family, and most importantly, fellow USL fans to give it a listen. I'd really appreciate it. Over an hour for this one. I know last week was 30 minutes, man, but so much to talk to, so much to get into. I keep loving it. Mondays have been filled with such joy for myself as we go on this journey together with each other. So very, very keen to see how this continues to unfold. This has been All Talk, All USL Talk, USL covering the latest scores, news, and developments in the USL Championship. Talk soon, everybody. Bye for now.